office issues, which connect to everything we've been talking about, but also to Sanhedrin and the most recent Sigma in Sanhedrin. So really, it was a super synergy moment, so that's what we'll try to do today. It's a huge topic. We'll try to do it as much justice as we can. And then again, as we mentioned, so we'll only have an opportunity to a little more Sanhedrin before the final, but so we'll try to at least get in Bezd and Shokul, issues like that, and then Chazer and Bezd Hashem will start with new topics next month. Okay, so let's begin. So let's talk a little bit about the fascinating sugya of the bracha, really the brachos that are associated with Ner Chanukah. There's a lot to say and a lot that synergizes with things we've been talking about recently, so just to try to cover as much as possible in a one-day slot. So first of all, the very existence of a bracha, of any bracha, let alone three brachas, but primarily the first bracha on Ner Chanukah is subject to a discussion in the Masechta Shabbos, and that discussion is one that really ties in very, very strongly with Masechta Sanhedrin and very much fits and supplements topics that we're discussing all year round. So I'd like to first spend a few minutes on that. So we know that the Gemara, try to open it up here, the Gemara asks in Masechta Shabbos that we recite a bracha, which are three brachas again, but the first of the brachas that we recite on Ner Chanukah is a bracha v'asher v'shanu v'mitzvoso v'tzivanu v'hadlik ner shel Chanukah. So asks the Gemara, yes I am scrolling while I try to open it up. So here it is, asks the Gemara on Chalkim HaLamad Aleph, on Rebchia Barash and Rav, Hamadlik ner shel Chanukah tzarech levarech, Revere me, Omaharo, and Ner shel Chanukah tzarech levarech. So let's skip a few lines. So that's the Gemara, right before the Y line, so my Mevarech, Mevarech, Asher Kedushan, Mitzos, Tzivanu, Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah. So here's the key question. Beheichan Tzivanu, Revivi Omer Milo Sosser, Rav Nechem Yomar, Sha'al Avicha, V'yageicha, Zichinecha, V'yomru Lach. Okay, so that seems to be a very, very major debate that's alluded to there, because it's not just about Ner Chanukah, as we can see. It's really about the whole institution of mitzvot Rabbanan and about the justification for making brachos on mitzvot Rabbanan, particularly with the language of Asher Kedushan of the mitzvot of Tzivanu. That language states that we were commanded to light Neres Chanukah. So the Gemara asks, quite pointedly, Heichan Tzivanu, where was there such a commandment? We can search the whole Torah and we won't find any reference to lighting Chanukah candles in Kislev in our houses. Got it a little bit specific because you won't find references to lighting the menorah, but you won't find any reference to what we do in observance of the festival of Chanukah in our homes. So Heichan Tzivanu. So here the Gemara has these two possibilities, either Lo Sasser or Shalavicha V'yageicha. So as many have discussed, this seems to parallel a machlokes that exists between the Rambam and the Ramban. And we've mentioned it in various contexts throughout the year because it's very Sanhedrin relevant, that we know the Rambam maintains that the whole institution of Dinim Drabana, the idea that Chazal have the power to make new rules, that derives from this pasuk in Parsha Shoftim that the Gemara here quotes, Vosasun Hadav. And the Ramban takes issue with it. The Ramban says it can't be for various reasons, which again we've discussed, but among them that it would result in equating Dinim Drabanan with Dinim and HaTorah, and A, we know that's not the case, and B, presumably it shouldn't be the case. So that's the Ramban's issue, and as has been suggested, perhaps that's the machlokas in the Gemara, that the first opinion is essentially expressing the view of the Rambam, that Lo Sasser is an adequate source to say that we were commanded and therefore we can recite such a bracha. And the second opinion, the Chemia, is assuming that Lo Sasser doesn't tell us anything about Ner Chanukah and we would need some other source. Now, why would Los Osser not tell us anything relevant to Hanukkah specifically? Because, presumably, like the Ramban will tell you, no, Los Osser can't be talking about Chazal innovating new concepts completely. Los Osser is about telling you what the Torah means. Perhaps it's about what we call Torah Shebal Peh, of the Midosh HaTorah Midrashis Behem, interpreting the actual Chumash. And you can say that in a few ways. You can say that either through Zer Shavas and Kal V'Chomers and things like that, or through explaining to what the Pasuk means, but that's what Los Osser is. But creating new dinim, that's not connected to Los Osser. Morty, you had a question?
Yeah, why is Rabbi Nechemiah not, why was Shalvi Chaviyam not be, why would you now run into the same problem?
Yeah. Right, that's a good question. It's a good question in terms of trying to figure out what Shalavicha would tell us. You know, Shalavicha perhaps is open at least to different kinds of parameters. And it doesn't seem to contain a los essay, which creates tremendous chumra. It wouldn't have been clear except for the statement that there's any kind of a direct mitzvah at all. So you could say, okay, Shalavicha v'yageicha is about history, is about knowing what happened. So the idea that we should do something to commemorate historical events, we discussed a little bit last night, that there should be a recognition of historical miracles. So perhaps that comes from that idea, but cannot be viewed as a los essay that's connected to los osser. So you would have to flesh out the parameters a little bit more. We don't have so much to work with in terms of doing that, but at least it doesn't necessarily bring us into all of the same pitfalls of los osser, which is a clear los essay with all the attendant consequences. Now, hypothetically, I don't want to get into this too much today, but you're bringing up another question that you have to answer for the Rambam, which we'll do a little bit. But if you answer for the Rambam and you're satisfied with that, then you end up with actually bigger problems for the Ramban, because we know the Ramban was an Orthodox rabbi, right? He believed in rabbinic authority, so you're going to have some premise as to why he believes in rabbinic authority. And it's hard to do that without running into similar kinds of problems. So, b'chlal, you're going to have to address why it is that there is a path towards rabbinic Judaism that doesn't have all the same questions, or at least many of the same questions the Ramban asks on the Rambam. But in any event, it seems like this machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban, is essentially paralleled earlier in this machlokas in the Gemara. Should also mention that specifically relevant to this Gemara is there are Rishonim who go even further than the Rambam. With the Rambam, he traces the authority for these new dinim to the Pasuk and Shoftim. There are those who take it even further, because the Rambam has limits to how he understands this idea. So the Rambam, when he counseled the mitzvos and the Sefer HaMitzvos, so he says he's not going to count mitzvos that are drabanan. Tariq mitzvos namru Moshe mi Sinai. So I'll tell you the mitzvos that were given to Moshe at Sinai, not the mitzvos that were created later. But you do have some of the Monian mitzvos who do go beyond that, and who will count, for example, Ner Chanukah as among the Tariq mitzvos, because they see that process of rabbinic innovation so powerfully, even more than the Rambam, on the other side of the Rambam from the Ramban. So question of how do you understand this Gemara, which says, Asher Kedushadam Mitzvosa V'Tzivanu, Heichan Tzivanu, Yurtzivanu from Los Osser. So the Rambam explains in Hilchos Brachos that that means, really we should understand it as Asher Kedushadam Mitzvosa V'Tzivanu, Lishmoa El Eilu Shetzivanu Lahadik Ner Shulchanukah. That we have a general imperative to listen to Chazal, which is going to bind us to their new mitzvahs as well. But we're not actually representing that this specific mitzvah is a part of the Torah. Rather, it is obligatory because of the authority that the Torah has given the rabbis. But there are Rishonim who will take it more literally and say, yeah, it's ki'ilu, the Torah itself said that you have to light Hanukkah candles. So it's interesting to consider the scope of this whole machlokas and some of the dimensions that are involved in the topic of Los Osser. And there is a fascinating discussion about this in this sefer on Hanukkah, which I just wanted to share with you again, especially for its synergy, because it very much connects to what we've been talking about recently in Sanhedrin. So the Sefer Ner Tamid on Hanukkah also has a Sefer called Chasis LaMaor attached to it, both of them written by Naftali Tzvi Ginsberg. So in the Sefer Chasis LaMaor, it's published here. So he discusses this whole Machlokas, the Rambam and Ramban, the Machlokas here in the Gemara, and the different dimensions of the questions of what's included in Mosas. And he notes a couple of points that, first of all, when it comes to Losas, and again, these are things that we have touched upon, so we note, for example, that there is a debate how to understand the point of Yamin Usmol. That Rashi and Chumash sounds like he means that even if you know that it's wrong, you should follow it anyway. That even if they tell you Yamin is small and small is Yamin, you should still follow it. And you mentioned that Shapiro always asserts that that's not the actual shot. It's not that you know they're wrong, it's that you think they're wrong because you're not fully holding the sugya. But certainly it's understandable how one could get the impression from that Rashi that he's saying, even if their mom is wrong. Right? So that's an interesting question to consider. Why should we listen to Chazal even if their mom is wrong? Or the rabbinic authority at that time, even if they're completely wrong. We've also mentioned the position of the Sefer HaChinuch, that the authority of Hosasser is not limited to the Bezim HaGadol Shushalayim, but would apply even to rabbinic authority in every era. So it discusses, in the context of all of this, so the way you would understand Hosasser in the perspective of the Rambam, in the perspective of Rashi, if Rashi means you listen no matter what, if that's what he means, and in the perspective of the Sefer HaChinuch, what makes all of that make sense has to do with the sugya that we looked at last week, the sugya in Maseches Bav Metzia and Daf Nun Tes. But there, the Gemara says that ultimately the halacha is like the Rabban, even though Rav Elazar brought all these dramatic symbols from Shemayim that he was right, but ultimately we still say Acher Rabban Lahatos. Why? Because Shlo Yirbu Machlokas B'Yisrael. That because of the desire to avoid machlokas, it's worth spending some time trying to figure out exactly what we mean by machlokas. Clearly, we're talking about machlokas, we mean something more than just disagreement. But we mean fundamental schisms in practice and attendant consequences. But in order to avoid that kind of machlokas, so therefore we say Acher Rabban Lahatos. Right? So if you recall, we spent some time discussing pretty recently in Sanhedrin, what do we mean by Acher Rabban Lahatos? What's the halachic message of Acher Rabban Lahatos? Is it that that's where the truth most likely is? And therefore, for example, if the Chachma is on one side versus the number of people, we'll follow Chachma? Or should we say it's not necessarily about that? We hope it's about the right answer. But ultimately, it's more about being able to come to a decision and not being deadlocked and having some kind of a, at least, semi-objective system. And therefore, the numbers will win out even over Chachma because that's the whole purpose of the system. So if you work off that premise, that Acher Rabban Lahatos is to tell us how to practice to avoid machlokas, so then you can understand really all of the questions. Because why should we say that Losasser, even if the authority is wrong, even if you know the authority is wrong? Because maybe it's not about whether this opinion is correct or not. It's about an overwhelming mandate to avoid machlokas b'Yisrael. And the whole debate between the Rambam and the Ramban. So it's mentioned, so the Ramban is arguing with the Rambam, how could you equate Dinim Drabanan and Dinim Minat Torah? Right, which is a question that comes from two angles. One is that we have sources and rules that we know distinguish between them. Right, most prominently, Safek Drabanan Lahakel and Safek Dereis Lahachmir, and many other such rules. But even if we didn't have such sources, it seems illogical. Why should we equate Torah authority, which is clearly more prominent, and rabbinic authority, which should not be on the same level? So, as he writes, if you assume that the whole purpose is so then it makes sense that it doesn't really matter where the din is coming from. That once the din is going to be relevant to our communal practice, so then the principle of we should follow the authority in order not to get into machlokas is going to make sense. So then in terms of the principles that we know exist, like Safek Rabbanan Mahakel, so that we can explain in a different way, we can say that Chazal built that into their system. They said that, okay, one of the ways in which they make rules is they're going to employ a principle of kula within their system. But as far as Los Osir is concerned, since Los Osir is about avoiding my focus, so then it's going to extend to every matter of communal policy, whether it comes from the Torah or it comes from Chazal. Make sense? You want to follow? Hi.
Wouldn't though, if they make a mistake, wouldn't people still be annoyed and still be like, they made a mistake?
So that draws on what we said a few minutes ago. The question is, what does machlokas mean? Does machlokas mean people shouldn't be annoyed? Or maybe machlokas means that whatever you think personally, we still have to have a policy. Right? In a certain sense, you know, it's comparable to other mechanisms we have. Let's say you have a presidential election in America, and so after the election is over, 49% of the people are going to be, quote, annoyed, and they're going to say that, oh, they elected the wrong guy. But as far as how our country is going to be governed, it's going to be governed as one unity. So machlokas means we're still going to have one joint system. A little bit less than half the people will feel that they're very angry about what happened, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what we're talking about. We want to avoid machlokas. Yisrael?
Rabbi, re-explain the connection between Aharav and Lahad, the explanation of Aharav and Lahad and the Machlokas from the Ramban and the Ramban.
Yeah, because basically the Ramban is asking, he's asking many things, but to address this focus of the question, so why should it be that a Din Rabbanan should be equated with a Din Minatara? How can you tell me that they come with the same level of gravitas, with the same level of truth, with the same level of authority? If we're looking for truth and we're building our authority based on that, so how can you say that a rule that's made up by very wise men is equal to a rule that's made up by God? So his point here is that that's not what it's about. This is purely a policy to avoid machlokas. So if that's the case, we're not saying that the rabbinic authority is actually equal in terms of wisdom or absolute truth to the Torah. We're saying that as far as the need for avoiding my focus, it's treated the same way. Elliot?
Who did you say saying this?
So the truth is, this is rooted in Gemara's. I mean, the idea, the Gemara in Bava Metzia has that phrase, shel yirvu machlokas v'yisrael. I mean, it's pretty strongly foundationed in earlier sources. But at the moment, we're quoting from the Sefer Kasas Lamar, who's putting it all together in this context, but it's really coming from some pretty clear precedence. So his point being that this also just highlights that when we discussed the sugya of Acharav and Lahatos very recently, so we saw that one could raise the question, are we looking for truth in its closest form, or are we looking for a policy, essentially? And what he's basically asserting is that the position that says we'll follow even if the position is wrong, we'll have Los Osir apply even in later generations, and we'll have Los Osir apply even to new Din and Rabbanan, and all of that is perhaps a reflection of the idea that it's a matter of policy. So then the question that we're going to see is, so why did Abelazar bother to bring all these symbols and all these dramatic signs if he knew that this is the way policy works anyway? So you could say, like we said then, we saw a little bit of this, the Tosfos in Yuvamas, that maybe there is a question as to how do you understand Acharav and Lahatos? Is it about trying to get the truest answer, or is it about trying to get policy? What he happens to suggest here is that maybe Reb Elazar held that you would only follow the Rabbin when there's no way to prove your answer some other fashion. But if you had a divine method to prove conclusively that you were right, so then you wouldn't follow the rabbin. So essentially, the rabbin only comes in when, which is truth is what probably what everybody holds to some extent. The question is, what place is there for something like a baskol? Everyone understands that there is a process of deliberation initially, and that ultimately the idea that we need consistency in practice only comes after everyone's had their say. The question is, what's legitimate as far as getting to that point? So Rav Elazar finally held that if he could prove his point, not just through Svara, and not just through winning over the opinions of his colleagues, but even through HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming in and intervening, that's also effective in setting policy as well. So again, it's a tremendously synergistic moment between our most recent sugya in Sanhedrin and the sugya of the bracha of Ner Chanukah, which affects many, many other things that we've also talked about recently. So let's spend a few minutes on that point. So Maisa, the Gemara tells us that we make this bracha. There is a little bit to talk about grammatically just before going further. Our Gemara says that we say Hamadlik Ner Shel Chanukah Tzarech Levarech. And what is the bracha you say? Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah. And that's the nusach that you find in the Mishnah Berurah and a few other svarim. But happens to be there's a difference in practice here that the Shulchan Aruch and the Sfar says Lahadlik Ner Chanukah. That was also the practice of the Ari, as the Berahite quotes. That was also the practice of the Gra.
Why is it even the Hadlik in the first place instead of like Allah Lagamiro, which we generally find
right. So that's a bigger discussion. It involves so many different parts that we probably won't be able to get into it thoroughly today. I will just allude to it quickly that there is a big discussion in the first part of Sakam and about Zion. There's a big rush there and a big round there about what are the principles for Al and Lit. And there, it's not the distinction that's drawn is generally not between Daraisas and Drabbanans, but the question among the distinctions, we mentioned one a few weeks ago, the question of if the mitzvah is fulfilled right away or if it goes on for a little bit. But you also find the distinction that if a mitzvah can be done through a shliach, which is an indication that it's more result-based rather than action-based, then it's usually al. So then the question is here, how come Ner Chanukah then should have been al instead of lo for that reason? And that is a discussion about Ner Chanukah, which we probably won't get to today. But that's the question is a good one about why is it al instead of lo. It's a topic of a lengthy discussion. Although the fact that it's Drabbanan doesn't seem to be the guiding principle in which one it is. But we will mention a different point that some raise, that so either you have Lahadlik Ner Chanukah, which is how the Sfaradim, the Shulchan Aruch, the Gra, and the Arizal have it, or Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah, the way the Gemara and the Mishnah Berurah has it. And if you say Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah, so it's more parallel to what we say Friday night, which if you say Friday night, maybe you don't, depending on how you handle your Lachos Neris situation, but you say Lahadlik Ner Shel Shabbos. So, if you stay like that, so then it's the same. If you follow the Shulchan Aruch and the Gra and the Arizal, so why should it be Ner Chanukah and Ner Shel Shabbos? And so there are some explanations, probably all a little bit loose, because you could still see them in different ways. There are some who suggest that Ner Chanukah is more of a Chanukah Ner than Ner Shel Shabbos is, because there is a position of the Avnei Nezer, I don't think we had a chance to talk about, but the Avnei Nezer has a tshuva in which he discusses the possibility that there is a chiyuv to have a kli. Let's say, for example, somebody wants to just take a candle, and or however many candles the night calls for, but take at least a candle and melt the bottom of the candle and stick it on his windowsill. So is that enough? Or do you actually have to have a kli? Do you actually have to have a container? So many quote the Avnei Nezer, who says that there's actually a din of a kli, or a din of, let's say, a menorah. Now, I say many quotes, it's interesting that the Gnosis says that, because if you read the Tshuva inside, it's not clear what his conclusion is. In the middle of the Tshuva, he says that. He says that that's a possible scenario. He goes back and forth with proofs, and it's not 100% clear what his maskana is, but he might say that. So, some want to suggest that that means that the Ner itself is a chatzah shel mitzvah, and therefore, perhaps, that's why we call it Ner Hanukkah, according to that Gersa, as opposed to Ner Shel, like we say by Shabbos. But the others suggest, perhaps this is a more common suggestion, that Ner Hanukkah is a Ner of only Hanukkah. A Ner Shel Shabbos is, as we know, really fundamentally different. In fact, opposite from Ner Hanukkah, this was the topic of the first sugya we discussed a few weeks ago, that there really is an absolute opposite relationship between Shabbos candles and Hanukkah candles, because Shabbos candles are made to be used. That's why we have them, so we shouldn't sit in darkness and be miserable Friday night, while Hanukkah candles are made not to be used. That was the whole first sugya we discussed about the Isser L'shtamish Ba'orah. So perhaps one could say that when it comes to Hanukkah candles, it's literally a Ner Hanukkah. The Ner is nothing but a Hanukkah candle. While on Shabbos, you have a Ner. And the Ner happens to be a Ner that you have on Shabbos, or it's Ner Shel Shabbos. There are many sforim that suggest like that. Again, it's a little bit loose, because you could probably give the exact same sforim and say the opposite, but that's among the suggestions that note the difference. The Marshal was quoted, Mr. Brewer quotes the Marshal, let's quote the Marshal, kind of in between, saying that you should say Shel Hanukkah, but you should say it as one word, Shel Hanukkah. Not like you say on Shabbos, where it's two words, Shel Shabbos, but it should be one word, again, drawing some kind of a distinction. But in any event, prevalent Ashkenazi practice is like the here, so we have in the Gemara, like Mr. Brewer has it, to say the same way as we would say in Shabbos, Lahavdik Ner Shel Hanukkah. Now there is a major discussion that the Rishonim have, and that the Post can have many different approaches to, as to, since we have a question about that?
Yeah. Oh, this is about the Ezer. Why does Ner of the Chetzos, Shel Mitzvos?
Again, I think all these explanations are a little bit loose, you know, but he's saying that as opposed to connected to, really, he'd say, as opposed to Shabbos, where it's a means to an end, here in Hanukkah, the candle and the candle holder all take on a mitzvah status of their own. So, therefore, we call it Ner Hanukkah as opposed to Ner Shel Hanukkah. Again, I don't think it's the most compelling point in the world, but it's highlighting of that issue. So, when it comes to the three brachos that we have on the first night, the two brachos and all the other nights, so there is a machlokus how to do it. So should you do all of the brachos first, and then light, or do you recite the first bracha, v'hadlik ner shel Hanukkah, light that candle, and then make the other brachos? So it's an interesting kind of debate. And here again, you find two tracks in different minhagim, and each one that certainly has what to rely on. But part of the discussion seems to be, and this is something that we've alluded to, that it seems like when it comes to Ner Hanukkah, the bracha is not simply a berachas hamitzvah like we find elsewhere, but it's a part of the mitzvah itself. And it's a part of the process. And that manifests itself in a number of ways. There's a whole discussion why it is that the practice that we have of lighting Hanukkah candles in shul, which is essentially a minig, but it's a minig which the Shulchan Aruch says we should make a bracha on, which itself is not unprecedented. There are others who say to make brachos on various minhagim, like, for example, halal on Rosh Chodesh, which is a minig. But it happens to be, as the Chafen Tzvi points out, the Shulchan Aruch seems inconsistent on this point, because the Shulchan Aruch himself holds that you don't make a bracha on halal and Rosh Chodesh because it's a minig. So why does the Shulchan Aruch say to make a bracha on the minig of lighting in shul? So there's a whole discussion about why this should be. what exactly is the nature of lighting in shul? Is it more than a minute? Does it have more weight to it? But Rabbi Yaakov Emden has a chiddush here. Rabbi Yaakov Emden is sefer Mor Tzia maintains that it's because the bracha of Chanukah candles is different than other brachas mitzvah. It is a part of the mitzvah itself, because a part of the mitzvah is to call attention to the nes. And you can only call attention to the nes by advertising that that's what you're doing. If you look, for example, there's a commentary on the Rambam called the Chidushei Maharai. The Chidushei Maharai, at least in the Frankel Rambams, is printed in the back of the Rambam.
He said that the bracha is where you make it known that that's what you're doing.
Yeah, that's essentially what he seems to be getting at, that it's not like by every other mitzvah, that it's a separate din that you should bless God on doing the mitzvah. When it comes to Chanukah, it is a part of the action of the mitzvah. That here you're lighting these candles to make a certain point, and that point is not self-evident unless you state something.
What about the Parsimei Nisa and showing it?
Sorry. Which is all connected, you know, which is all a part of it. They all become one process. Is that your question?
Yeah, that is part of the mitzvah.
Right, so that's all part of the mitzvah, that the mitzvah should be in order to advertise something and to acknowledge it. So the Chidushei Maharai, if you look, it's printed in the back in the Rambam, Frankel Rambams. So it's in Hilchos Chanukah, Perek Gimel, Halacha Gimel. So his language here in Halacha Gimel is, "Umepnei zeh, hispinu chacham, shvalosu ador, shirshmo esmeh me'elu, shidchvalosu chafir kislei, v'imei simcha, v'halel, umadlikin behen haneros, bo'erev, apisme habatim." So the language of the Gemara that the Rambam is building on, the language is, "Lahalel lahodos." So in Mishneh Torah, he leaves out the word lahodos. So the Maharai points out that what does lahodos mean in the Gemara? So if you look at Rashi on the Gemara, lahodos means to say al hanisim. But it seems the Rambam is understanding that lahodos is ner, that that's what comes next. When he talks about lighting Hanukkah candles, that's lahodos. And therefore, if that's a part of the mitzvah, so perhaps that's why the bracha becomes more fundamental. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden goes pretty far with this, because he has a chiddush which the later poskim did not accept, but they accepted his svara for when it's relevant. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden actually says that if you have a suffix, whether or not you're supposed to light Ner Hanukkah, so normally the rule would be suffix brachos lahakel. So even if you do the mitzvah, you should leave out the bracha. But when it comes to Ner Chanukah, he says you have to be machmir, and once you're going to light, maybe you can say you don't have to light in the first place with the suffix. But if you're lighting, it only makes sense to light with the bracha, because that's how the mitzvah works. So that prat has not been accepted by later poskim, that you make a bracha even when it's a suffix. But the svara has been much discussed, and applied also to the topic we were talking about earlier in the week, the question of why the Shulchan Aruch says that when you light after Achetech L'Regel Menashok, that you still make a bracha. Right? So we were discussing a day or two ago that if you're lighting at that point, so it seems like it's a matter of suffix whether or not that's good. That's how Tosfos and others understood the Gemara that we started with. So, and that's how the Gra understood the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch. So if that's the case, if you're lighting after Achetech L'Regel Menashok, maybe you shouldn't make a bracha. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden and others quoting him understand that there are certain situations, at least, where we're going to make a bracha, even if other mitzvahs we wouldn't, because the bracha is more a part of the mitzvah here than it is by other mitzvahs. And this is discussed in many tshuvas. The Sefer Be'er Sarim. Be'er Sarim was written by Rav Avraham Yaakov Schlesinger, who was a posek in Switzerland. So he has many tshuvas where he builds on this Rabbi Yaakov Emden, this Mor Tzia, and supports it in various ways. If you look throughout the tshuvas, and many volumes of Sarim, he has many different comments about this. So among the ways in which he supports this, he says, first of all, again, to go back to one of the sugyas we talked about at the beginning of our Chanukah studies. So we saw that some of the Rishonim say that you're not allowed to use the Hanukkah candles because Haroah Omer, Haroah Yomer, L'sorach Hudadlik. We're concerned that the person who witnesses you doing this shouldn't think that you lit it for your own purposes. So he quotes a tshuva of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, who discusses that concern. He says, what are we worried about there? We're worried that people will be choshed to that, oh, look at this guy, he's not lighting Hanukkah candles, he's only lighting candles for his own purposes. No, the point is that that's inherent in what a Hanukkah candle is supposed to be. A Hanukkah candle is supposed to be a candle that people understand that it's not for personal purposes. And therefore, we need evidence of that. So the bracha that declares that is particularly valuable. And he notes, quotes that elsewhere, quotes the Ritva, who explains that in general, the purpose of Birchas HaMitzvos is so that we can display and reveal that we're doing this mitzvah for an intentional religious purpose. So especially when it comes to Hanukkah, if that's the whole thing, so then the bracha, which is important by every mitzvah, is going to take on a more fundamental role here than it will elsewhere. So it could be then that the bracha itself takes on more importance. And this could also extend not just to the bracha of the Hadlik Ner, but then also when we say Shasa Nisan, that also could be a part of that process, that we want to weave that into what's going on, and it has to be connected to the Hadlaka. So that could perhaps explain also the two views. We see that as a part of the Berachos HaMitzvah, that it should be specifically before the mitzvah happens, or if we see this as part of the mitzvah process, that we make the bracha, and then we light a candle, and then once we have that candle there, so we declare Shasa Nisan Lavoseinu, that's all integrated into one process. It is interesting to note, parenthetically, that even though our practice is to recite the two brachos and the three on the first night, all in the context of the menorah, there is a discussion in the poskim that if one is unable to do that, that perhaps both the Shachiyadu and the Shasa Nisan, each one discussed separately for their own reasons, might be able to be detached from the lighting of the menorah. It could be that even one who can't light a menorah or see a menorah should still say Shasa Nisan because it's on the event, it's on the day, and not just specifically connected to this mitzvah. And it could be the same could be said about Shachiyadu. It's a discussion in poskim that says in Shulchan Aruch that if you didn't say Shachiyadu the first night, so you should say Shachiyadu the next night, whatever night you remember. Or if you didn't light till a later night, whatever it is, you say Shachiyadu to whatever night you remember. But the poskim discussed that perhaps theoretically Shachiyadu could be detached from the mitzvah. Maybe it's like a yontif, and we make Shachiyadu and Aviyam Tovim, not necessarily in conjunction only with a specific mitzvah. So the poskim discuss, so what happens if it's the eighth night and you finish lighting already and you still haven't said Shachiyadu? So then maybe in that case you'd say Shachiyadu afterwards, detached in Lechatchila, we'll try to connect it to the Neros, and even if that means waiting until the next night if you missed it after you lit the first night. But if there's no more nights to wait for, maybe we would make it separately. That's also a discussion in poskim. But what this all leads us to is that this is true perhaps not only about the bracha of the Hadlik Ner and the other brachos, but it's interesting also, Haneros Halalu. It's Haneros Halalu. So I think, you know, we grew up with it, so we know from our youngest age, so we say all the brachos, we light the candles, we sing Haneros Halalu, which sounds like most Zeros. Sounds like it's a Zmiros. You know, it sounds like something that we do as part of the family celebration. It doesn't feel like such a mitzvah, per se. But it's interesting to see that the way it's dealt with, it could be that Haneros Halalu is actually significantly more important than that. And that Neiros Halal was actually sourced in the Sefer Sofrim. In the Sefer Sofrim in Perek Chaf Mishnah Vav. And the idea is perhaps more fundamental to the process than we appreciate. So it sounds like from the Masechet Sofrim, and it sounds like as well from some of the poskim, such as the Marashal, who is quoted by Magen Avraham and the Mishnah Berurah, even though this is probably not your most familiar practice, that you light the first candle with the bracha, and then say Haneros Halalu, and then go on and light the rest of the candles. So I think the more prevalent practice, you're probably more familiar with, is to say Haneros Halalu at the end. But the idea that Haneros Halalu should be before the other candles and before the other brachos is a surprising idea. And the Pri Chadash and Pri Megadim, they ask on this, isn't this an issue of Hefsek? Why should you sing this Zemer in the middle of your brachos, in the middle of the mitzvah? Why don't you do like others do and wait till the end? So it seems to suggest that Haneros Halalu is perhaps much more fundamental to the process of Ner Chanukah, that maybe just like the bracha identifies what you're doing. So Haneros Halalu in more detail identifies why you're doing this, and therefore that could be a crucial part of the mitzvah. And Reb Soloveitchik, I forgot where I saw this, Reb Soloveitchik, somewhere in Reb Soloveitchik's name, that he understood that the whole takana of the bracha of Sha'asa Nisan is that we make that bracha connected to a nes that is identified verbally. So on Purim, you read the Megillah, okay, so we can make a Sha'asa Nisan then. But on Hanukkah, if all we were to do would be just to light the Hanukkah candles and not specifically identify how the Hanukkah candles are connected to anything, so then we would not be able to say Sha'asa Nisan on that practice. So therefore, it becomes particularly crucial to explain what's going on, and Haneros Halalu is perhaps there more important than we otherwise would have thought. So that's an idea that a number of Sfarim have, and that explains why perhaps it should be recited then, and also why it shouldn't be viewed as a hefsek. It's mamish main hanyan, it's a part of the mitzvah practice, so you could understand why that's not going to be considered an interruption, neither within the brachos nor between the different candles. It's not going to be considered something that's getting in the way. There is another way to say this idea, which you can find in some other Sfarim, that maybe the idea is, this is perhaps somewhat of a process of consecration. Now we know that we say that the candles have a special status to them, that we're not allowed to use them for our personal purposes, and that we see them as holy. And it gets perhaps unusual emphasis in the Haneros Halalu. And so much of Haneros Halalu is about that. Haneros Halalu Kodesh Haim, Ve'em Lanu Rishus, L'Hishtamesh Behem, El Rosa Bovad. So why are we bringing that up? Why is it so important that we announce that? So perhaps that's the whole point. Perhaps, again, we see that a Hanukkah candle has to be designated as a Hanukkah candle, has to be understood as being exclusively a Hanukkah candle in order for it to fulfill its role. So maybe we also have to be makdishit in that sense. We have to verbally declare that it's set aside for this purpose. So that is a part of what Haneros Halalu was accomplishing. It spends so much time talking about that because that's what it's there for. It's there to identify, A, this is why we're lighting the Hanukkah candles, and B, therefore, these Hanukkah candles are only for that and not for anything else. That's all a part of the same theme. So perhaps Haneros Halalu essentially is the verbal hakdasha, so to speak, for that purpose, and that's why that's so much the subject of what it talks about. Now, this could also perhaps address has some halachic relevance. I don't know how far you got when you were learning the Hanukkah sugya on these Sunday mornings, but the Gemara talks about Yitzvah Mitzvah. So a little bit later on, so the Gemara says, the Gemara asks the question, so the Chiner Kedusha is by what? The Ner Hanukkah, is it holy? We'll talk about it as a prohibition of Yitzvah Mitzvah. So does it have the status of Kedusha to it? So it sounds like the Gemara is taking it for granted that there is no Kedusha in Ner Hanukkah. Right, what exactly, what mitzvah objects in general have Kedusha and what don't? That's the whole discussion. Certainly not every mitzvah object automatically has Kedusha. You know, for example, tzitzis or an esrog doesn't have Kedusha. We have a prohibition to benefit from the esrog during the time of Sukkot, but it doesn't have automatic Kedusha, at least not by itself. It could be that one can make the case that there's a hekesh to the Sukkah and Sukkah has same Shemayim, but the object of mitzvah does not automatically have Kedusha. So Hanukkah candles, we wouldn't necessarily think are kadosh automatically either. So that's what the Gemara seems to be assuming when it says, what, the kodesh? Clearly not. So that seems to be a stira to Haneris Halalu, right? Don't we say Haneris Halalu Kodeshim? Now we discussed early on that the Balamor, among the different views in the Rishonim, if you recall, we mapped out somewhere between 3 and 6 views in the Rishonim, depending on how you count, as to what the Isser to benefit from the Hanukkah candles is about. And the Balamor was the one who understood it in kind of a Kedusha model. We see it like the Shemin and Psilos in the Beis HaMikdash, as Asr Bahana in the Kedusha sense. So this line in there, Salolo, perhaps supports that. But you could also say that it just doesn't mean it in the same sense. If you want to reconcile the Gemara, which says they're not Kodesh in the Beis HaMikdash sense, it doesn't necessarily have to contradict Haneru Salolo. The Kodesh, as we know, means set aside and distinguished. So it could be that we're simply declaring that these candles are Kodesh, not like the Beis HaMikdash, but Kodesh, that they are set aside, that they are not for personal use. And that itself is a key component of the Hanukkah lighting process. So therefore, this statement is not simply a song. Songs are nice too, but it's not simply a song that you just get together and sing. But perhaps it's far more crucial to the halakhic neiros process than we otherwise could appreciate. Okay, so maybe we'll just quickly review what we spoke about. So we discussed concepts related to the bracha and brachos connected with Neiros Hanukkah. First, the Gemara says, "Hakhi say Asher Kedushanu Mitzvosa V'Sivanu," when it's not in the Torah, "Hinchan Sivanu." And the Gemara has two answers, either Avivia from Losasar or Nechemia from Shalvicha V'Yagedcha. We discussed that this seems to parallel the Machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban, that the Rambam holds all new dinim, the Rabbanan, come from Losasar, and the Ramban says no, Losasar is much more limited, so maybe that's why the second opinion of the Gemara doesn't want to use Losasar for Ner Hanukkah. And we discussed how the various Machlokas surrounding Losasar, that the Ramban asks the Rambam, how could mitzvahs Rabbanan be on the same level as mitzvahs min HaTorah? And we know that Rashi sounds like he's saying that you follow the Chachal Bidum in the wrong because of the Sosar, young and small, and some debate as to whether or not that's actually what Rashi is getting at. And how the Sefer Achinuch maintains that it applies even in later generations. And we discussed the analysis of the Sefer Kosas Lamar, that all of the Losasa considerations are driven, like the Gemara sounds like in Bava Metzia, by Shlo Yibra Machlokas Fi Yisrael. We don't want there to be Machlokas, so therefore we say Acharabim Lahatos. So that ties into our discussion of Acharabim Lahatos, the way to get the most Chachma, the most truth, so to speak, or is it simply a way to have consistent policy, and therefore we're counting on people pretty much regardless? And that could address all of these issues. Why, for example, like the Rambam, that Dinim D'Rabbanan would have the same policy as Dinim D'Torah, because it's all about not having machlokis in practice, and therefore also why the Sefer Achinuch would say it would extend to later generations as well, and therefore why also maybe would theoretically apply, even if you're close to sure that the rabbinic authority is wrong. And then we talked a little bit about the bracha itself, l'hadlik ner shal chanukah, l'hadlik ner chanukah, it's a difference in minhagim, difference perhaps in yourselves, and a few somewhat weak interpretations of why we would distinguish between Ner Shel Shabbos and Ner Chanukah, if that's the nusach that you have, either based on the Avnei Nezer, that Ner Chanukah has particular significance to it, as a Chetzesh or Mitzvah in itself, or because of the Isser L'Shabbos Behem, so Ner Shel Shabbos, you use that as a Ner, it happens to be on Shabbos. Ner Chanukah is a Ner that's designated for Chanukah, and that's why it has perhaps a different phrasing according to those who change it. And then we discussed that the idea of a bracha on the Hanukkah candle is perhaps different in its severity and importance than normal birchas mitzvos. This is actually a part of the mitzvah in order to make clear what you're doing, which could explain a few practices. Rebbe Mendel went so far as to say that you would even recite the bracha in a suffix mitzvah. Because of that, others disagree. But they use this to explain why, for example, Shulchan Aruch says, as we've been discussing this week, that you should light even after Ashtecha Regal and Ashok, and it sounds like he means you should light with the bracha, and also the practice of lighting in a shul with a bracha, even though it's a minig, and normally the Shulchan Aruch holds that you don't make a bracha in a minig, but here he does say to make a bracha, again, perhaps because that is a crucial component of the mitzvah, and also noted how that was supported by the concern, as Rebbe Eger explains, the concern of we don't want an observer to say you lit the candle for yourself. It's not that we're worried about him being kosher to do it, but that's a fundamental part of what the mitzvah is, that it should be clear that it's for Chanukah purposes, and how that's also displayed by the Ritvos and in general brachos are there to show the mitzvah is with spiritual intent. So if the whole mitzvah is about spiritual intent, then all the more so it's going to be important that that be a part of the process. And then we talked about the machlokas, a couple of machlokas, and first of all, the three or two brachos that are recited, depending on what night it is, that are recited on the Hanukkah candles. Is it that we recite Hadlik first, and then light, and then make the other two brachos? And also, what would happen, the other two brachos, each one with its own discussion, could they be recited separate from the lighting Bechlal, like we find by Shachianu, by other Yom Tovim? Then we discussed how also in Eretz Halal it was a big machlokas had to do it. That it sounds like from some major poskim quoting the Maharshal, and it sounds like this from the Sefer Sofrim also, that in Eretz Halal should actually be integrated into the process of the lighting, even so much so that you would make it after the first bracha before lighting the rest of the candles and the other brachos. And the other poskim said, what are you talking about? That seems like a hefsek. That seems like such a strange thing to do. And I think the practice that we're all more familiar with is to recite an Eretz Halal at the end. But we talked about why an Eretz Halal could be understandably placed there. Because again, that's a part of the process that we need to identify what it is we're doing, especially because, as contrasted with Megillah, so Megillah, we have a whole oral declaration. We have a whole Megillah, as the expression is, saying what's happening. And Chanukah, we're doing something which doesn't have any explanation otherwise, unless we say something at the same time. So, therefore, that's a part of what mentioned the Maharai, who noted that when the Gemara says Lahodos, so Rashi translates that as Al-Hanisen, but he thinks the Rambam understands that to be the Hadlaki itself. And therefore, we could understand maybe why an Eretz Halal would be integrated into the process. And we mentioned the Rav statement that the Bracha of Shas HaNisim can only be recited when you have a verbal mention of an ace, and therefore, again, we could see why maybe one would put an Eretz Halal before that process. And we mentioned also an alternate explanation that perhaps this is a consecration of the candles. If we have this idea that the candles are Kodesh, so an Eretz Halal declares that, and that's why there's so much disproportionate emphasis in an Eretz Halal to those themes, Kodesh, Ayin, Bein, Lashon, Bein, Lander, Rishus, Lishna, Mesh, Behem. And then we just added to that that there are those who worry that the Gemara, which explicitly says there's no Kedusha to Ner Chanukah, seems to be at odds with an Eretz Halal, and we suggested that it's not the exact same usage, that it's not Kodesh in the base of Mikdash sense, but it is Kodesh in the sense of being set aside and separated from other use. And that's the whole theme that we're trying to express in Haner Solalu, and perhaps that's why we use that word, even if it doesn't have the exact same connotation as it does in other contexts. All right, so we'll stop here, and we'll dive in again.